This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. Elaine Coe reporting for AvWeb. We're on the line today with Jim Remar, President and COO of the Cosmosphere and Space Center in Hutchinson, Kansas. I'd like to start with a little bit of background on the museum and the conservation work you do there.
First and foremost, we're a museum dedicated to preserving the history of space exploration. And so we have a tremendous artifact collection. We maintain one of the largest collections of American artifacts outside of the Smithsonian and one of the largest collections of Soviet space artifacts outside of Moscow, which really puts us in a position to tell the story of the space race. And as a part of our operation, we do exhibit fabrication, artifact replication, and restoration and conservation. And so, you know, we usually see a major project like this once every 3 to 5 years, but typically we'll do 1 to 2 smaller projects every year.
And this project was so significant as far as the history and as well as the complexity of the artifact restoration.
For us, it was a labor of love. We were honored to be chosen by Bezos Expeditions to do this. Mm-hmm. We were first contacted in 2012 and invited to submit a proposal to conserve the original F-1 rocket engines, and we were successful in securing that project. The engines themselves were recovered in spring of 2013, and upon the recovery, the engines that were brought up by Bezos Expeditions were then shipped to our facility in Hutchinson, Kansas, to begin the labor of restoring or conserving these pieces of American history. First began planning for the project. No one had any idea what they were going to find at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. And so we were planning to be able to really be fairly nimble and accommodate any size or type of artifact that they were able to recover. And so we have at our SpaceWorks facility about a 7,000 square foot high bay storage facility, and we converted that into a conservation lab. We installed, new lighting, state-of-the-art equipment. We put in gantry systems and began to prepare for the arrival. Each F-1 engine, and for every Apollo mission, there were 5 F-1 engines, and these were the engines that provided the thrust to get the rocket off the launch pad and propelled on its trajectory towards the moon. And each engine, again, was 19 feet high by 12 foot wide and weighed approximately 20,000 pounds and were capable of producing 1.5 million pounds of thrust individually. And so we had to have large areas of space because, again, not knowing what they were going to recover, we needed to make sure we had an area where we were able to work on an engine if it was fully intact and complete, or many components that were from the original engines.
Are you able to say what portion of the 5 engines on that mission were recovered as far as a percentage?
Sure. So in terms of the overall recovery, we were able to determine that we had components from the Apollo 11 mission, the Apollo 12 mission, Apollo 13, and Apollo 16. And of the objects, we had primary components. So we had 5 thrust chambers. Thrust chamber was kind of the meat and potatoes of the engine. We had 2 turbo pumps. And the turbo pump, if you kind of think like a fuel injector in your car, that's what the turbo pump did. We had 3 what are called liquid oxygen domes with their fuel injector. These are where the fuel and the oxidizer were injected into the thrust chamber. We had two heat exchangers, and then a variety of other components. So we had a lot of incredible pieces, again, being able to determine that they actually came from specific missions was an incredible feat.
Great. Could you talk a little bit about the resources used, how many weeks, months, how many people were involved in the
process? Yeah, absolutely. For us, it was a 2.5 year process. So from the point the engines arrived to our facility late March in 13, it took us until August of this year to complete the process. And we had, at our facility, we had four technicians working on this full-time. We also had various consultants from local universities. The National Institute of Aviation Research down at Wichita State was instrumental. KU School of Engineering was instrumental. And then leading the project was Terra Mare Conservation, and they are marine and earth conservators, and Terra Mare spent 2.5 years coming out to the Cosmosphere, where they would spend 1 month a week actively working on the project, helping guide us through the process, and really writing the procedure and protocol. Because one thing that a lot of people probably don't realize is that you've got so many dissimilar exotic metals that have never before undergone treatment. And so our team was literally writing the procedures and protocol as we went through the project. Again, the size of the objects, the weight was a challenge. The fact that they had been immersed in a saltwater environment for over 40 years was a huge challenge. And then the fact that there were so many exotic alloys, such as Inconel, that hadn't had this type of active treatment, and the fact that there were so many dissimilar metals. There, you know, you may have a treatment procedure protocol for stainless steel, but that treatment or procedure could act adversely to Inconel. And so we really had to determine the best way to treat so we didn't harm any of the materials that comprise the artifacts. The treatment underwent several phases. The first phase, everything was placed into water retention basins. And so these were basins that initially allowed fresh water to flush over all of the faces of the artifacts. And this was done to remove debris, some minor corrosion, but it was also in an effort to begin to stabilize the artifacts, because as soon as oxygen hit the artifacts, that was a catalyst for advanced corrosion. It began to react adversely with the metals as well as the chlorides that were impregnated in the materials. And so we kept the surfaces wet and began to rinse the surface of the chlorides. We then introduced deionized water as well as a minor corrosion inhibitor to truly stabilize the surface. That process took about 4 or 5 months. Once that was complete, then each individual object was disassembled as far as it could go, and then the pieces were put into individual treatment tanks, and then each treatment tank was equipped with a circulating pump, and then chemical solutions were placed into each treatment tank, determining on the materials. And so we were able to take smaller pieces that were samples, and we could test the reaction of the chemicals to the samples. And so the conservators, Paul Mardikian and Claudia Camello, were able to create a recipe for each piece. And if you think of conserving these as you would maybe treating a cavity, when you go to the dentist, the dentist treats the corrosion on your teeth at the surface, but then he obviously has to drill down and get the corrosion subsurface. And that's the similar type of thought process. So what these chemicals do is it actively draws the chloride out of the material. And then at the point the chloride level drops, each artifact was cleaned. And so we were using we would use a pressure washer. We also used ultrasonic cleaning methods, electrolysis. We even used little dental tools or dental picks. And then we also used media blasting with dry ice, which cleaned corrosion off the surface but didn't harm the artifact. And then once that was done, each artifact was dried. And then in most cases, a protective inhibitor was placed onto the artifact as well.
And now a number of these pieces will go on display starting in 2017 at the Seattle Museum of Flight. So pretty soon people will be able to see these artifacts firsthand.
Well, we have for years been leaders in the realm of restoration and preserving artifacts. And for us, to be able to conserve pieces that were associated with the historic Apollo program, which got man to the moon, was really an honor. The rockets themselves obviously weren't recoverable, but to be able to recover the engines and to actually see these marvels, because at the time these were cutting edge engineering and technology, and it really, for me, made us think about what we were able to accomplish collectively as a country and the things that we as humans can do when we work together. And it just represents opportunity and inspiration, and being able to conserve these hopefully will provide inspiration for generations to come.